Welcome to Elevate, the podcast where trial lawyers Ben Gideon and Rahul Ravapudi talk about the real issues that come with the fight for justice. So let's find inspiration in the wins. Let's learn from the losses. But most of all, let's keep learning and getting better and keep getting back in the ring. Are you ready to elevate your own trial practice, law firm, and life? Let's get started. Produced and powered by LawPods.
Hey, it's Ben. Raul and I started this podcast because we love hanging out with fellow trial lawyers and sharing ideas that can make us all better. And both of our firms also regularly collaborate with other lawyers across the countries in cases where we can add value. If you're interested in collaboration, or even if you just have a case or an idea that you want to bounce off us or brainstorm, Raul and I are going to be hosting confidential case workshops the first Wednesday of each month. So here's how it works. If you have a case or an idea that you want to talk about or brainstorm with us, just send me an email to ben@elevate.net, E-L-A-W-V-A-T-E.net, or go online to elevate.net and submit a case workshop request. We will schedule you for a confidential 30-minute Zoom meeting where we can talk about your case to see if we can help. If you feel like there would be good value in collaborating on the case further, we can talk about that. If not, that's okay too. We enjoy helping other trial lawyers because we know someday you'd be willing to do the same for us if we needed your help. So again, if you're interested in workshopping your case with us, just send an email to ben@elevate.net or fill out a case workshop request at elevate.net, and Rahul and I will look forward to chatting with you soon. Today's episode of the Elevate podcast is brought to you by Filevine. Filevine has a software program called Lead Docket, which is the gold standard for managing your new case intakes and leads, your Glengarry leads, your Glenn Ross leads, and all of your other leads. So check them out at Filevine and manage your leads. We're also brought to you by Steno. Rahul, you guys work with Steno.
Steno is the best in court reporting services, not just in court reporting services, but even some of their technology tools. We're talking about AI a little bit on this podcast and their transcript genius, where they can summarize and take interrogatories based on deposition transcripts, is so useful. If you haven't tried it, definitely try it.
We're brought to you by Hype Legal. Hype Legal does digital marketing, web development for trial firms. It's owned by our good friends, Micah and Tyler. They recently redeveloped our firm's website, so you can check our website out. If you like it, give them a call and they can help you out too. And finally, we're brought to you by Expert Institute. Rahul, you guys work with them, right?
We both use Expert Institute because you always need to be cutting edge in the experts that we use in our cases. Going to the repeat experts every single time is going to make you a lesser lawyer, and you always want to keep up, and the best way to do that is with Expert Institute.
For more than 4 years, you've helped us elevate the practice of law. Now, we're ready to take on the business of law. Say hello to the new podcast from the Elevate team. Build and grow your law firm. Enjoy this special preview episode.
Welcome, everyone, to the Elevate Build and Grow Your Law Firm. I'm Jeff Wright, Chief Operating Officer at Gideon Aitzen. Our host, Ben Gideon, partner and owner. And today we are joined by Megan Piper, EOS extraordinaire. For those of you that don't know EOS, it's the entrepreneurial operating system, and she's basically going to give us the tools and the principles to help organizations clarify, simplify, and achieve your vision for growth. Welcome, Megan.
Excellent. Thanks so much for having me, Jeff and Ben. I'm delighted to be here.
We're excited to have you.
So one little side note here, just so you get the context of where we're coming from, Megan, maybe you can help us figure out how to solve this problem. We're operating in an environment today that's hovering between 85 and 100 degrees because the air conditioning in our office building is malfunctioned now, going on several days. And so as a consequence, I opened my window so I could get some fresh air. And then, of course, the leaf blower guy with the loudest leaf blower in America is right outside blowing the pavement for reasons that I don't fully understand. So there's a lot of forces conspiring against us here today, but hopefully we can make it work.
We're going to be fine, Ben. And, you know, I don't have the solve to everything, but in EOS, we say everything is just an issue. So you should put that issue on the list. Your team will help you solve it.
That's a good,
I like that.
Good starting point.
Somehow it falls on my plate as the chief operating officer. But
yes.
I haven't come up with a solution yet, unfortunately.
Other than yelling at the landlord.
Yeah, which is going nowhere. Thank you.
Well, we get 6 weeks of summer in Maine. So, you know, enjoy it while it lasts. You won't get that in January.
We are. Exactly.
So, Megan, we thought maybe we could just start out by you telling us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you came to the EOS system and how you've worked and helped other businesses adopt and understand those principles.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ben. Once upon a time, I was actually an unhappy high school French teacher in Augusta, Maine.
Oh, c'est très bien.
voilà. You know, I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs. Most of my family actually had businesses in the Freeport area. And so retail.
That's where I live.
Yeah, I know.
Hometown.
Thank you. And so I'd watched my aunts, uncles, cousins all run these entrepreneurial nimble businesses. And I'd grown up in them and, you know, worked in them a little bit as a teenager as well. And I so enjoyed that dynamic environment that I was just not experiencing in the administrative school system. And so actually an entrepreneurial friend of mine said her finance person had left and she's like, I'm sure you could learn numbers. Like, why don't you quit your teaching job and just come work for me? So she was classic visionary, as we call it in EOS, like has all the ideas and needed someone to help her execute them. And lo and behold, it turned out I was great at being that person. So I kind of had a natural knack for business that I didn't even realize I had in me. So Connie and I teamed up. Back then there were about 5 employees. And what we did was we sold technology solutions to humanitarian organizations. So we worked mostly globally in developing countries with the UN, large NGOs, and we consolidate from the big tech manufacturers, make sure things were in the right voltage and language, and we'd ship things through customs in these developing countries. And then we worked with local IT companies to go in and install and service all of these technology needs that the UN had to run their projects. So really fascinating business that Connie had founded several years before I joined, but she didn't have that person to help her take that vision and make sure everyone understood what was expected. So in EOS, we often say when you put that visionary and integrator together, it's like rocket fuel. So things started to take off because suddenly she had somebody to kind of throw things over the fence to. And so we started to grow. We were 5 people when I first started there. And as we added people, we added complexity. And pretty soon it looked really great from the outside. Like we were profitable. We were growing. We'd opened an office in Europe at that point. However, Connie and I felt like we didn't know how to keep scaling this way. Like we were really tired. And we'd often look at each other like, we don't know how to keep going at this pace. Like things felt chaotic internally. So we went on a quest for outside perspective. We actually joined industry peer groups. We got executive coaches and we discovered this concept of an operating system. And I always say to people, it actually wasn't EOS because what matters is that you have a system that you run the business on. Because prior to that, I was really the system to make sure that all that stuff wasn't end up in Connie's office because she needed to be focused on growing the business and working with the clients out in the world. So I put this operating system in place and it was a game changer for us. Like people suddenly understood like, where are we trying to go? How did they fit into that? What was expected of them? That's really what unlocked that scalable growth for us. So we went from $3 million a year up to $52 million. We executed on the largest IT contract ever awarded by the United Nations, which meant we delivered 45,000 laptops and classroom software to 900 islands in the Philippines. Really cool project. Financial success, but more importantly for me, my favorite part of Planson was that Connie's succession plan was her 5 kids. So I helped her to bring them, some of them into leadership, some of them on the board, and then I really wanted to do my own thing. So that's where EOS came in. By then I'd read Traction, and so I understood this operating system concept, and I loved the simplicity of EOS. It was a little less complex than the system that I was using. And I knew when I went out into the world with my own consulting business, like that was what I wanted to teach people. So I've been teaching EOS for 6 years now. I've found that like my experience as an entrepreneur, as a COO, CFO, all those years is instrumental in what I can do now. And I just like pinch myself every day that I get to do this. It is so much fun helping companies grow. And EOS is industry agnostic. So I work across all different industries, all different size companies. And my job is to help them succeed and then to get out of the way and help them keep running on EOS. So it's an absolute blast.
I know you've worked with some law firms. Are there, because most of our listeners are lawyers and law firm owners, are there particular considerations or challenges in applying a system like EOS to running a law firm as opposed to other types of businesses that you've worked with?
Yes, there's one big difference that really you encounter in any type of business that has partners. So whether it's a CPA firm, wealth management, law firms, like it's the same additional issue that we kind of layer on top. And we actually have a tool specific to it in EOS because it's so common that we encounter, there needs to be alignment amongst the partners. Because as we say in EOS a lot, as goes the leadership team, so goes the health of the rest of the company. But add a layer to that, as goes the partner health, so goes the rest of the company. So those partners have to be really aligned, have a great communication cadence. Often, you know, there'll be a set of meetings. It might be monthly, it might be weekly, it might be quarterly. Like you have to decide what the communication cadence needs to be, but you've got to have really healthy, open, honest debate happening amongst the partners so that that misalignment doesn't end up hitting the leadership team and therefore doesn't end up hitting the rest of the company. Because if there is a crack between those partners, and I see this happen all the time, that is going to be a chasm once it gets out to the average employee. And you're not going to end up where you want to go as a business. So it's the rules of engagement that you need to align on as partners that is the additional layer of complexity when you're dealing with any firm style business.
And I think for me, being part of a number of vision plans and strategic plans through a variety of different organizations outside of the law firm and here at a law firm, if you don't get buy-in from the top down, you're almost dead in the water.
Absolutely.
from jump.
Yeah, I totally agree, Jeff.
Can I ask about the partnership specific issue? Because I've been a partner and owner now in two firms. One was the firm I was at before I started my own. One of the features of partnerships in a law firm is that people typically become partners. I mean, they can be start out that way if they're founders and owners, as I am in my new firm. But in other firms, the classic model is you become a partner because you're exceptional at handling the casework, generating revenue. Essentially, you're good at practicing law and they don't want you to leave, so they make you a partner. That does not necessarily translate into having either a shared vision for the growth of the institution or for having the leadership skills necessary to lead, other than just doing your own individual law practice. And that I've noticed, how do you navigate that issue? Because you've got people in the partnership, A, who may not have that much interest in the business side of the practice, B, may not be very adept at being a leader, or may not even have the skill sets or the qualities you'd be looking for in a leader if you were choosing leaders based on some other criteria other than that they're good at practicing law.
Yeah, fully agree, Ben. It's really important to note that for a healthy company, especially a law firm, we differentiate between the concept of a leader and the concept of a partner. So it's really the owner versus employee concept. And as a partner, you have to want to be part of designing the vision of that firm, or at least buying into where the firm wants to go. That is separate from being an employee. So as an employee, you might be that great lawyer that's actually directly practicing. If you think about this in the accountability chart structure that we have in EOS, it's just a clarified org chart where people understand their roles and responsibilities and reporting lines. You might have a lawyer that's actually two or three layers down in that chart. So you'd have like the leadership team, which is the core functions of the business. So there's typically something around sales and marketing, something around operations where actually deliver the legal services, and then something around finance, administration, HR, like the healthy back end of the business. Then you also have like a COO type and a CEO visionary type. So we call them visionary integrator. So if you think about that as the leadership team, actually the lawyers report up through to that operational leader who may not be a lawyer themselves. And so they're, in order for EOS or an operating system to work, people really have to be willing to let go of thinking about the fact that they're a partner, that they have a certain title or a certain power. And when they're working in the business, they're a lawyer. And then when they're at the partner meeting, that's when they get to have a voice about where are we going? How do we actually want to get there? but we can't actually pull that ownership card when we're out working in the business. Like, we have to respect those reporting lines and the accountability that we've agreed to as a team. It is different than being a partner. To tie it back to your question around, like, how do they learn how to be a leader if they've never had to experience that? That's really where EOS brings a lot of beautiful simplicity. So we have a tool that we teach partners and everyone in the company, whoever it's applicable to. And it's the 5 leadership practices and the 5 management practices. So it's just 10 things. That leadership side is like big picture, where are we going? I need to be able to communicate where we're going as a business so people understand how they fit into that. I need to be always fighting for the greater good of the business. Like, where are we trying to go? I have to put that above my personal self-interest, which can be hard in a partnership situation. So that's the leadership side. We also teach people management. That's more what we classically think of as, hey, what needs to get done? When does it need to get done? What does it look like? So we can teach people in just a couple of hours some really basic principles that you do not need an MBA to understand. And then people can go out and execute on those. And we put tools around them like quarterly conversations and a healthy meeting communication through the level 10s and the quarterlies. And all these things make those leadership management accountability, we call it LMA, they make those things easy to make sure you're doing so long as you follow the best practices of EOS. So it's just really simple best practices. So you don't have to overthink this. Like, we don't want lawyers having to put a lot of energy into how to do LMA. We want you to put energy into delivering amazing advice to your clients. Is that a helpful answer, Ben?
It is.
I was just going to say, I mean, for, you know, a firm listening that's maybe looking to take the next step to grow, whether it's go into a different area of practice or bring on more attorneys or maybe merge with another firm, do you find they should have a defined strategic plan before bringing in maybe an EOS consultant? Or do you think the EOS consultant should be step one before putting together a vision?
I'm probably biased in my answer, Jeff. What we find consistently across all companies is there's always plenty of vision. There's never a lack of strategy or a lack of ideas. It's that we're not aligned on it. And so really what EOS does on the vision piece, it's called the Vision Traction Organizer. It's 2 pages, 8 questions. We get you to discuss, debate, and align on those 8 key areas as a business. It's like, what are our core values? What's our core focus? Basically our mission statement. Where do we want to go long-term? Usually 10 years, like 10-year target. What's our basic marketing strategy? How are we going to focus sales and marketing resources? Where do we want to be in 3 years on the way to that bigger 10-year vision? Where do we want to be in 1 year, like super specific aligned? And then in the next 90 days, what are we doing in that 1 year plan? And what are the issues that are going to keep us from getting there? All those ideas are already in the room. We just need to debate which of them do we actually want on those 2 pages so we can all rally around and actually achieve that. So that alignment process is about 80% of what I do. And so they don't have to do that in advance. That would be like cleaning the house before the cleaning lady comes.
Makes sense.
Well, my wife makes me clean up before the cleaning lady comes. So I've always thought that was odd.
That's dangerous territory for me. That's not my expertise, Ben. It's between you and your wife.
But so, just building off of Jeff's question there about that in terms of timing, I mean, I've had it explained to me that you know, when you start a new business, initially, it's really all hands on deck. Everybody's doing every job. You're just trying to keep yourself in above water. You don't have a lot of extra time and resources for planning or budgets for consultants. And so as we started our firm for the first few years, I felt like there would come a time when we would want to impose some more structure and have, you know, formalize things with quarterly planning and consultants, which we've now done in hiring a COO implementer in Jeff. But I don't think we could have done that right away, but I'm now questioning that based on your answer. But just to give us a little bit of kind of the trajectory of how it goes from startup, where it's just a visionary owner and maybe 1 or 2 employees, what's the right point in time to start imposing this kind of system and structure onto the business, in your view?
Yeah, it depends. A precursor to implementing EOS, and there's 3 different ways you can implement. You can do it on your own, read Traction. All our tools are downloadable and free on our website. We have a base camp where you can just do a monthly subscription to access some training to DIY better. And then the third is people engage with an implementer to help them, coach them through. And then often they graduate within a couple of years and run on their own. The best time to do it. So the disclaimer, Ben, is that you need to be sure you have product market fit. So some startups that come to me, like they're not quite sure who their customer is yet or kind of what exact business model they want. That's actually where it's a little dangerous to put an operating system into place because you're still figuring out who you are and who you're selling to. So you need some rough idea how that works, or you need to be super flexible in the EOS tools and maybe edit them a bit to make sure they're working in that dynamic startup environment. So that's usually like below 5 employees. Once, as soon as you have just enough critical mass, and it can be 3 to 5, it helps to start to put some of it into place, even if it's just a level 10 meeting, where like you have a regular communication cadence where people start to understand what's expected of them, that they can problem solve together. And then if you look at the accountability chart, when there's 5 people, like you're going to see the same name on several seats. Like I have 6 people in my business, my name's on several seats. And so as you grow and you maybe get more formalized with EOS, you're going to start to do what we call delegate and elevate. Like once upon a time when it was just me, my name was on every seat, right? And I sat down and said, okay, what do I love? What I'm great at? What's my highest value? Which is ideally delivering to clients, just like a lawyer. What do I kind of suck at? What do I not enjoy? What do I dread doing? And for me, that was marketing. So that's the first thing I'm going to delegate to somebody else when I can make a hire. And then that frees me up to add more value in the things I do well. And then as the business grows, I add a couple people, I formalize the EOS structure more. And I say, okay, what's the next thing for Megan to delegate and allow somebody to elevate into learning that role that they're going to do better than me? So it's a constant progression. Even when you're at hundreds of employees, it's always asking yourself, like, where do I add the most value in the business? Like, that's where I should be focusing my time. And then where can I bring in other people into the EOS structure so they understand what's expected? And that gives them opportunity and it frees me up to deliver more value.
I think that's important for Ben to hear because we have a tendency to put my name on a lot of seats here. And it's something they say, well, Jeff can do that. He's the COO.
I mean, it is interesting to think through that because when we started, my name was on almost, my partner and I divided up all the responsibilities and our names were on every single seat. And then gradually over time, almost all of those seats have been filled. And despite Jeff's comments, we've just recently filled even more seats. We hired a marketing director. We now have our chief operating officer. We have a finance director. There are still some seats like HR. We don't have a separate individual person and Jeff handles that. But you can see that kind of shaping, coming into shape over time. I remember looking at the org chart when we first started thinking, oh my God, like, are we ever going to have somebody in this seat or that seat? And now 4.5 years, we have people in almost every one of those seats. But what I wanted to ask you about that is, how does that map into your budget and cash flow model? Because obviously everybody would like to have every seat filled, every critical job performed by a qualified individual. But the reality is, as you're building a business, you have to prioritize and you have to keep your eye on the cash flow metrics. Otherwise, you're going to grow yourself into bankruptcy. So what's the technique or the approach you use to guide people on balancing their budgeting and cash flow with their growth?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, listen, all of us on the screen, we ended up business owners because like you can sit in every seat. It doesn't mean it's always the best decision, but I totally agree, man. Ben, what you're alluding to there is just because we want to delegate something doesn't mean it's the right time yet for the business. And so your accountability chart can almost be like a roadmap. Like we want it to be a living thing that's accurate for the next 6 to 12 months. But sometimes as companies are growing quickly, they'll even kind of have a draft version of what they want for the future. And that's just me knowing, what do I want to delegate when we have the right resources to be able to do that? And like that knowledge is different than the moment we actually hit go on it, and that it might be the right moment for the business. So it's always this balance of what's the right moment for us financially, which partially is a partner decision, and then partially is the leadership team decision, depending on the roles that you're bringing people in for. But we need clarity on what's the financial situation? That needs to be part of the meeting cadence. What's cash flow? How are we doing on revenue? How are we doing on profitability? And when is the right moment that, say, Jeff's doing something, say Jeff's sitting in 3 seats, and a seat does not equal a full-time job. That's important to know. So it's just a set of responsibilities that might be a piece of what you do. But if Jeff's name is on three seats, likely one of those isn't his highest and best use. And if you even put a dollar value per hour, if you think about it really, this is extreme, but I'll give you a stupid example from when I was a CFO. When we were five people at the business, I opened the mail every day. And so through the years, I just kept opening the mail like it was what I did. The invoices were in there, whatever. And eventually you get to dozens and dozens of people. And an EA came along one day and she took the mail off my desk. She's like, we need you doing something more valuable than opening the mail. And Harvard has done research that says on average what our value is on a leadership team per hour. And they say it's $500 an hour. So if you take that and you think, at that time, I was opening the mail, which would have been like a $15 an hour task, right? So in some ways, I'm stealing $485 in value from the company. So it's that balance of putting a dollar value on your highest and best use and when's the right time to free me up for more of that highest and best use financially for the business. You know, it's...
Someone had to do it. That was my facility seat that I was working on that day.
We can all do all of it. It doesn't mean we should, right?
True. Megan, you had said something earlier that I picked up on that if I'm a listener out there listening to this, it may be intimidating. You had said a 1, 3, and 10-year plan.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm out there listening, I'm thinking to myself, I don't know what the heck I'm doing next month. How am I going to figure out what I'm doing in 10 years? And why is that important?
I'd say about half the teams I work with, they know for sure where they want to be long term. And then some of them feel a little bit what you're describing, Jeff. Like it's actually a scary thought. And sometimes we want people to fill in those 8 questions on the VTO pretty early in their EOS journey, but they're not always ready to. I sometimes do find there's a team that's like, they're 1-year thinkers. So let's really get aligned and clear on that. And then as we start to be better at executing on that, then it becomes clearer what we might look like in 3 years. And maybe usually I'll get them to throw some spaghetti against the wall on the 3-year and the 10-year, but it doesn't stick because they don't actually know yet. And so it's an evolution. It's not like we decide our 10-year target and that's it, we're done. It's that this vision is constantly morphing as you evolve as a business and you'll get clearer and clearer and clearer. And some teams start really clear on the 10-year and some start really clear on the 1-year, but we always get there in the end that everyone's aligned on, like, this is where we're going 10, 3, and 1 year. And it's not just a flip of a switch. It's like a dimmer that you turn up over time.
Take your playbook to the next level by joining a legal network of all-stars at psrplaybook.com. psrplaybook.com is a free digital legal library created exclusively for plaintiff lawyers by the nationally recognized personal injury law firm of Panish Shea Ravipudi LLP and features video content showcasing the tactics, strategies, and concepts implemented by some of the industry's most successful trial attorneys. PSRPlaybook.com promotes learning, shared knowledge, collaboration, and best practices. Get in the game and see for yourself by joining our national network of plaintiff lawyers. Subscribe now at PSRPlaybook.com and learn from the best.
Another thing when you were talking about kind of your true worth for per hour, $500 an hour for somebody on your leadership team, one pitfall that I've fallen into when implementing something is you get too meeting heavy. You have to have a meeting for everything. And then you develop a committee. And then you develop a subcommittee. And next thing you know, you look and your leadership team is tied up in 5 hours of meetings a day or Zoom calls. How do you avoid that pitfall and ensure that the meeting times are as beneficial as possible? Because it's a very easy pitfall to get into.
Very easy. What we teach people to do is follow the EOS meeting pulse and like be really strict about that actually. And then figure out, do I actually need other meetings? Because sometimes when you're running the meeting pulse effectively, which is a weekly cadence, for the leadership team, it's 90 minutes. For another department, it might be shorter. And there's certain pieces, there's a very strict formula we follow that makes sure you cover and communicate on the right things. So the level 10 meeting, the quarterly meetings, and the annual meetings to reset the plan for the year. If you start with those and people learn to do them, it takes about 12 weeks to get good at an L10 in each area in the business. We find when those are going well, and then we have a quick quarterly conversation with each individual one-on-one every 90 days to let them know how they're going, that a lot of those other meetings actually disappear. And if you're still going to need to have one, like say there's a working session on a particular case, for example, make sure you know who's accountable for this meeting. What are the objectives and agenda? Like, what do we need to come prepared with in advance? And who actually needs to be there? Like, value everybody's time, as you're saying, Jeff. Put a dollar value on it. If they do not need to be there, is there something you could record and they could watch later? Is there some kind of takeaway you could cascade to them? We're really big on cascading messages in EOS. So like, really value everybody's time. Do not torture them by sending them to meetings they don't need. Most of it can get done in a weekly L10. Like, the issues list can be 20, 30 different topics. You can bounce all over the place. That's the beauty of it. It consolidates into 90 minutes at the leadership team, the stuff you really need to talk about and solve together. So yeah, don't torture people. Make it effective and productive.
Good. Thank you.
In the Traction book, Wickman talks about how the area where many businesses struggle is that in order to implement the accountability standards, it requires you to make people uncomfortable. And I found that in our own business. We started with, I think as a lot of businesses do, sort of a loyal person who comes to you and is a good citizen, but may not be the right fit for the seat. Over time, we've had other people that fit into that, you know, description. And as we've initially, that worked out because we were just a small business with very few structures or accountability standards, and everybody was doing everything. But as we started to implement these systems and become more systems focused and accountability driven, certain people don't make that transition very well. And we've not been good about forcing that issue early. At least initially, we weren't, because you can't envision your business without an individual person. It becomes too person focused. And sorry, I do have a question here, but one of the things that occurs to me is in the law firm context, it's particularly challenging because lawyers are not great at accepting accountability. They want to view themselves as sort of independent actors. And that, of course, part of being any professional is that you are you're required to perform to your own professional standards, and you're supposed to be afforded a fair amount of leeway within which to, whether you're a neurosurgeon doing your surgeries or a lawyer doing your cases, you're not going to take well to being micromanaged. And so there's a conflict there to some extent with accountability practices. So that's a lot there for you. But that's, to me, that's been one particular challenging area. And I think it's one that many law firms struggle with, is sort of managing the unmanageable or holding accountable people that don't want to be having accountability imposed on them. How do you deal with that?
We have an EOS model with like the root cause of most common issues. And one of the pie pieces, one of the six components, is the people component. 80% of the issues that we see in a business, 82% actually, are the people. So you're hitting on a really important part, Ben, whether it's a law firm or any other type of business. The people are always the messiest piece. And so we teach people to have the right people in the right seats. And that, you know, you've got to have both. Like, you've got to passionately, from partners down to every single employee, people answering the phone, people at the front desk, like, they've all got to buy into, we want to have the right people in the right seats and do this, achieve this vision together. So right people means they align with your core values. And we have a tool that helps you to evaluate that in US, because it can feel a little squishy. But it simply means we need to really enjoy working together. The people need to show up with a certain attitude every day. And it looks different in every company. But like, we've defined what great people look like that we love working with. And you've got to have at least a minimum expectation met on the right people side. The other side you're referring to is the right seat. And so that's, are people good at their jobs? Do they really get innately how to do it well? Do they look like they want to be there doing it? And do they have the right skills emotionally, intellectually, physically, like all those things, GWC, the seat. But first, we need to know what seats we need. So forget about the people. What are the seats that we need on the accountability chart? And then who are the people that GWC those seats? So let's take that example of the lawyer that you mentioned. They have to be willing to buy into this system, because we don't want somebody who GWCs their seat, but they don't align with our core values, because that's going to erode our morale as a company. It's going to make it so we can't align on things and work together. So it has to start with the partners being, you know, it's non-negotiable. The people have to align with our values and GWC the seat, that these things have to go together. That said, You said, you know, they don't like to be held accountable. I'll go back to that LMA concept I mentioned earlier. It's actually an equation. So it's the extent you lead well, help people know where we're going, plus you manage well, help them understand expectations. Accountability is actually a byproduct. And so it's really a two-way street. Often we're like, well, that employee doesn't want to be held accountable. Well, do we actually help them to know where we're going? What's expected of them? Like, what does great look like? What is their role in the business? Because usually there's something we're not doing well as leaders that is making it so that individual lawyer can't actually succeed. So it like starts with yourself. Am I LMAing well? And then with them, are they the right person in the right seat? And it's a fruitful conversation to have bidirectionally with that person. Usually when people understand, they'll buy in. They usually don't understand what's expected.
Megan, just to kind of piggyback off of that, I want your opinion, honest assessment on this statement that I made to Ben and Taylor as we were perfecting our vision plan and our strategic plan. I said, I need you to remember that anytime there's this much change and this much expectations and this much growth, we are going to have casualties. And it's okay to have casualties, and you have to be comfortable with that. Do you find that statement I made to them accurate? And if so, why?
Absolutely. It's very rare that the team that starts EOS with me is the same team that's graduating a couple of years later. Very, very rare. There's always changes. And sometimes it's that through the process of defining and clarifying, they realize they didn't have the right person in the right seat. And often it's a gift to that person too, because you're holding them back if they're in the business and they don't really want to be there and they don't really succeed in their role. Like, they're going to succeed somewhere else. Like, free up their future. Let them go succeed somewhere else. So it's like a combination of discovering, do we have the right people in the right seats? And then something also that Ben alluded to earlier, which is that sometimes we as a company evolve and the seats grow faster than the person can keep up with. And that doesn't mean that they weren't amazing and valuable once upon a time, but like, our needs have changed and it might not even be reasonable. Like, it's not reasonable to think a bookkeeper is going to become a CFO in 90 days. And so sometimes we expect people will just evolve with that role in our growth, and they don't. And so we can honor and be gracious about what they contributed to that date, but we have to help them succeed somewhere else because they're holding us back and we're honestly holding them back too. But it's the hardest part of the process, Jeff. Like, it's the conversations that I'm most often helping a team to navigate because they're messy and they're awkward and you care about people and they've contributed a ton to your business, but everybody has to be the right person in the right seat for us to get where we want to go.
And I think that's what makes it so hard is the employee didn't do anything wrong. The business has simply outgrown their skill set through no fault of their own. And it's one of the most difficult conversations to have, but I think everyone knowing that from jump and out of the gate that those conversations are going to have to happen at some point is just critical to the whole process.
And do it with humanness and respect. Like, somebody leaving the company should never be a surprise to them. We've done something wrong as leaders if they didn't see it coming. And usually they'll self-select out when you've actually been clear. And then that's the best scenario for everybody because they've gone and found something else that is going to fulfill their own needs better. And that's a natural evolution of us as people. But it's hard. It's messy stuff.
Yeah, it is. But I have to say, and Jeff and I were just talking about this earlier this morning, that what seems like an insurmountable challenge, if you have somebody that either isn't working out or is leaving for various reasons, it can be hard to envision the business surviving that because somebody is either really good at their job or makes themselves indispensable in some way. But every time we've had a transition where someone's left and we filled their position, we've been better off a month or two later because we've become better at selecting people and hiring and understanding what our values are and what we're looking for over time. But it is hard. I feel like we're continually relearning that lesson every time it confronts. And especially when you're starting out and you only have a few employees and you have a lot to do, it feels like losing anybody is going to be, you know, an existential threat to your business. But as you go and you start to develop kind of belt and suspenders and have some additional capacity, then it's easier to tolerate that transition. I want to ask you, other than the issue of personnel, what do you see as the biggest challenges and mistakes that businesses are making as they try to grow, scale up, and implement some form of a system to manage their business?
In the context of law firms, for sure, it's that the partners are misaligned. Like, make sure there's healthy alignment there so that the rest of the company can follow that.
And let me just ask you about that. If that's the case, then what do you do about it? I mean, you have like marriage counseling between partners, or you...
You do,
Because, I mean, one thing about a partner is you can't fire them. They have tenure in a sense, right?
They do. It's one of the messiest part of working with a firm. And I'll admit, as implementers, we're really careful and we evaluate, can we actually help these people? Like, do they want to align? Because if they don't, you know, if you have... I work with one particular firm that the partners were super aligned the first couple of years. And more recently, somebody's wanted to exit. And so they're looking to get a certain cash disbursement, right? And they're not getting the level that they want. And like, they have sabotaged everything. And like, it erodes the entire organization. But if that person doesn't want to change, like, most firms have some kind of clauses where they can at least contain the person. But it is going to keep the entire company from achieving their vision. Like, it's so important that those partners are aligned and that they want to be aligned, that they want to have healthy disagreements. But like, once we've made a decision, we're not going to undermine that decision. We're not going to go out into the business and be like, hey, we decided this as partners, but I totally didn't disagree. I didn't agree with it. Like, that's just doing end runs. Like, there's so many unhealthy behaviors. They have to want to align. And I'll be honest, Ben, there's not a lot we can do as coaches and implementers to force that if they don't want it.
And I mean, the term align is kind of broad because most people align in some things and disagree about other things. And I'm assuming every healthy partnership, the partners can have healthy disagreements and debates about issues. So what you're talking about is kind of in the core vision of the firm, aligning in that, right? I mean, because, yeah, you know, there will be compensation disputes and,
yeah,
you know, process disputes. Probably every single issue that you're utilizing for EOS, there's going to be debate about how to best do it.
Oh, absolutely. And we want that healthy debate. Yes. But there is a decision-making structure, which also is usually defined in the operating agreement, that, you know, somebody's CEO, and so they maybe are basically managed by the partners, but they're going to get directives, and then they need to have some authority to make decisions in the business that won't be undone by the partners. Like, there has to be a clear decision-making process. And then related to your other question, like, what are the other big mistakes we see other than like partner misalignment and people? The other two big ones are unclear process. Like, if you have the right people in the right seats, but you don't have clarity on like, how do we do the most important core things in the business, whether that's delivering the legal services or how we do marketing. Like, we've got to have a core way that we do the most important things that drive outcomes. If we don't have that, it's not scalable. Like, each person's going to do it their own way. It's not going to be profitable. It's not going to be efficient. It's not going to be fun to manage people because they don't know what's expected. So behind the people piece, process is the next most important component. And then the issues component in EOS, it's really just about great problem solving together. So one of the biggest things that holds a company back is that they're not actually making decisions. Like, they're second guessing themselves, or they circle and circle. They're looking for consensus. Like, you're never going to get consensus. Just like you said, we're going to have healthy debate, and then we have decision-making structure for how we decide and we move forward. And if we got it wrong, we can maybe change our mind, but we're not going to sit there spinning, trying to get the perfect answer because there isn't one. And it's going to keep us from moving forward as a company. That one's really key. And teaching the problem solving at every level. Like, we don't all want all the problem solving to roll up to the partners or to the leadership team. That, like, if it's an issue in the finance function, empower those people with clarity on their area of responsibility in the accountability chart, where they can go and make a decision that we won't come and undermine as a leader.
I have to say, that issue of having that the partners cede responsibility for certain areas of decision-making and authority within the firm has been absolutely critical for us. And bringing on Jeff, before Jeff came, and I'm sure many of our listeners can relate to this, we were two partners, Taylor and I, and if the staff didn't like the answer they got from one of us, they just went to the other one.
It's like mom and dad, yeah.
And it was very often that they would get a different answer, like going to a different parent, and then they would engage in whatever behavior they chose to that wasn't what the one partner wanted. And ceding 90% of that to Jeff has solved that problem in a really great way. And also taken that the discrepancy in answers away, so there's consistency, but also it takes that burden off of our plates of having to deal with that. So it
gives you mental freedom. It's great. Absolutely.
But you know, the partners need to give that up. They have to be willing to cede that to somebody else and then back them up on it. You can't give that responsibility to your COO and then allow staff to continue to come to you and undermine, you know, and that doesn't work. So.
And the partners have to know, like, where do we want decisions? Like I say to partners all the time, you can have authority over the color of the tissue boxes, but I don't recommend it. Like you can decide what you want on that list. It's usually balance sheet stuff. Like what are big equity, liability, and asset decisions? Like that's the stuff. Or big compensation decisions. That's where the partners need to get involved. The rest, like delegate and elevate.
Yeah. One area that I think is critical, but can also be a trap is you need to have transparency. You need to have transparency in your decision making so that every person at your business understands the direction that we're going and why the decision was made. But you don't want to have transparency to a point where it's a democracy and everyone gets a vote.
Yeah.
So it's almost that gray area, that fine line of keeping everyone in the loop. But really, at the end of the day, you want your leadership team to make the decisions.
Yeah, I agree, Jeff. Like a great example where you see this a lot in EOS is the rock setting process. So, you know, we'll source ideas from the whole leadership team. And then there's a way we help them to narrow it down to the most important stuff. But if the team starts to spin on, hey, should we do that one? And what's the scope of that rock? Is it really the most important? I don't let them lose a lot of time on just spinning. I'll quickly turn to the Jeff in the room and be like, Jeff, what's the decision? Like, this is not a democracy. You've heard from the team. If you have any other questions, you can ask them. But I'm going to look to you to make a decision so we keep moving forward.
Yeah. So you can spin your wheels for hours on thing.
You can. It's a waste. It's not a good use of time.
Right. Sorry, Ben.
Oh, no. Just in the last couple of minutes, Megan, can you tell our listeners what your process is and how they find you if someone's interested in working with you? Do you work with, are you limited, you know, geographically? Tell us a little bit about your services and practice.
Great. Thanks for asking, Ben. I'm not limited geographically. One of my things that I'm known for in EOS is that I work globally. And particularly with dispersed teams. So I work a lot with teams that are in many different locations and I'm helping them to communicate better working virtually or occasionally in person. So they can find me on LinkedIn. EOS has microsites for all the implementers. So if you Google Megan Piper EOS, you'll get my microsite. And our process is we always start with a quick intro call with somebody who's a key decision maker, kind of help them understand really is EOS the right fit for you or not? Because the next step in our process is a 90-minute complimentary overview with the leadership team. So we want to make sure like we're going to get the right people in the room for that 90 minutes to help them decide together, is EOS the right decision or not? And then during that meeting, I'm also evaluating like, am I going to click with this team? Am I the right fit for them? Or is one of my other 800 EOS friends going to be a better fit? Because we always want to help a company find the right fit. So just reach out to me. I love chatting with people. I help you figure out, should you do a 90-minute meeting with me or one of my colleagues? And then if people say it's a go after that, we have a proven process we walk them through. That's about 10 sessions over 18 to 24 months. And then you'll be running well on EOS. And my job is to work myself out of a job. I'm not a consultant. I'm there to help them run on EOS and free them up to run it in the future.
Awesome. Megan, this was great.
Yeah, really appreciate your time today and learned a lot. I'm sure many people would gain a lot of value from working with you.
Thanks so much. It was an honor to be here.
Privilege. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You as well.
Did we rise to the challenge today? If so, tell a friend. If not, tell us what would make the podcast more valuable to you. Thanks for spending your valuable time with us today. And remember, when we elevate people and we elevate practices, we elevate the profession. Produced and powered by LawPods.